Welcome to MoneyWeb Now. Business news every morning.
It's Wednesday, 21 September. I'm Simon Brown, coming to you live and loud from the MoneyWeb Global Headquarters in Johannesburg, South Africa. On the show today, chatting with Derek Ganser from Rensburg from Anchor, looking, where's he finding value? I mean, or is cash king in this market? There is a sense of how he's managing this market. Justin Schmidt from ABSA, impact of stage 6, although now it's stage 5, on manufacturing. I mean, have they got alternatives? Have they managed to implement? Is there a future? Is it renewable? And then Carter Kleinhans from Diversity Urban Property Fund. Purpose-built investment assets, talking around those, particularly impact investing. They obviously, as the name suggests, they're doing urban developments. The show is brought to you by Stanlib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. Morning headlines from MoneyWeb. Eskom wants to burn 17 billion rand in diesel next year, and we're going to have to pay for it. Yeah, but can they give us our electricity? That's it. I don't mind paying. I just want it to work. Business day, Treasury makes major concessions on retirement reform. This is the two-part structure. Firstly, it's been kicked down the road by a further year, and the plan is to allow people to access some of the savings portion immediately rather than just money that you've saved into the future. In other words, dip into your past savings. But the big point is, got down the road by a year. Morning markets, US was red. S&P down 1.1%. NASDAQ off 0.9%. Asia's red with Sydney and Tokyo both down 1.4%. Commodities mixed overnight. Gold, $1,672. Brent, $90.91 a barrel. Platinum, $920 an ounce. Palladium, $2,153. Rand, $1,771. Bitcoin, $19,000. Top 40 opening call, 220 points to the red. It's just over a third of a percent lower. That is 10 cent trades down 1.4% in Hong Kong lunch break.
MoneyWeb Now. On the money. Also available on podcast.
Jane and I with Derek Ganser from Rensburg, portfolio manager at Anchor Capital. Derek, appreciate the early morning. You're an old hand at markets, and I don't mean that you're an old person, but you've experienced markets before. 2022 is proving a tough year. How are you positioning yourselves at this point of view? I mean, certainly there's some value out there, but I mean, I don't know, the next couple of months, maybe even the next year is looking unknown.
Yeah, absolutely, Simon. So I think 2022 has certainly been a tough year for equities, and in fact, all asset classes for that matter, unless you've held on to some US dollars and sat on that cash. But obviously that comes at a cost of yield, you know. Mm-hmm. You're obviously starting to get a bit of yield now, but certainly a tough time to invest in equities. As we look forward from where we sit today, I don't see any race away markets to the upside. Obviously things have re-rated to the downside. There is certainly some value out there. But the problem that I see in the short term is that there's no clear catalyst to see some strongly higher share prices, call it across our local bourse at the moment. So I think the way that you've got to manage this is, you know, cash is very important. Holding on to high levels of cash is certainly key and critical at this point. But then don't disregard the fundamental value that starts to present itself. As I said, no race away markets, no share prices running away to the upside. But use the opportunity to build good core positions in quality companies and be patient. You know, as soon as we start to see that language change from the Fed, markets will turn, and they'll turn quicker than what you know, the man on the street expects. And you just want to know that you're holding good quality equities, using the time through this 2022 period to build that portfolio, and then be patient and just let that fundamental value unlock over the period over the next 6 to 12 months. That's really kind of my personal approach.
And it might even be longer. I mean, we simply, as you said, we need the language of the Fed to change. We need earnings revisions to be to the upside. And the weight might be there, but I take your point that there is some quality there, and we can almost at our leisure buy some quality at good prices.
Yeah, I think there's certainly going to be some degree of emphasis on things that are paying good, strong yields at the moment. I think, you know, some of the commodity companies are delivering good, strong yields across that spectrum. Mm-hmm. So be prepared to forego a little bit of capital growth, lock in some yield, and then just know that as the cycle turns that you invested in quality. I think Thungela is going ex-div today around 60 rand a share, so that's quite a nice yield. But yeah, really just a handful of good quality stocks, call it 10 stock portfolio in this kind of environment. The banks look quite interesting at this point, I think. Some of the key retailers look interesting. And then, as I said, just focus, put an element of focus on that yield component within what the market's offering you at the moment, and be prepared to just collect that yield as we sort of fight this tide of rising inflation, higher interest rates, and yeah, be patient.
A quick last question. You mentioned banks, you mentioned some resources. Retailers, which is a standout perhaps for you in the retail space?
Again, you've got to say to the quality. So okay. Things like ShopRite's, mm-hmm. Mr. Price look quite interesting. Yes, they're on sort of lofty and elevated PEs, but I think these are quality businesses that have got the ability to weather the storm. Those two stand out for me at this point. And then you can go a little bit down the sort of tier there, look at something like a Pepco. I think that's a very well-run business. That looks quite interesting. But yeah, those top quality businesses are the ones to stay invested in and use the opportunity to actually start building more exposure to it as you see those softer days in the market.
Yeah, I take a point on that. And they might be look a little pricey, but they're quality. And you know, I've chatted Pepco before, as you say, good management there. Derek Ensler from Rensburg, Anchor Capital, appreciate the time. And that's our poll today on LinkedIn and Twitter. How are you doing this market? Buying, selling, holding? Maybe you're hiding under your bed. Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter.
Your money knows it's not just about the money. It's about your returns, returning the favor, and empowering people. Your money can do more to change the narrative. Beyond delivering consistent returns, investing in the Stanlib Kanyisa Impact Investment Fund can help eradicate poverty and protect the environment. Invest for more impact at stanlib.com/more. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider.
MoneyWeb now. On the money.
Chatting now with Justin Smith. He's head of new sector development at Absa. Justin, always appreciate your early morning insights. When we first got stage 6 load shedding, and I'm going back, this was back in June when it first arrived, sort of out of the blue. I actually was at an event with a couple of folks involved in manufacturing, and their sense was, they've got backup plans, they can run generators and the like. Of course, diesel is hugely expensive, and whilst they've got the plan, it's a sub plan. It's not what they want to do. Is your sense in manufacturing, have we got to a place where we are better prepared for it, or have we been caught a bit flat-footed? Daily Maverick talking about this being markedly the worst year of load shedding yet.
Morning, Simon. So I don't know how you ever plan for stage 6. I think we've prepared over a decade now as the manufacturing industry, but it really is difficult to kind of make this work. And like they said, it's inefficient. So over 10 years, kind of we've seen deterioration of generation, and manufacturers have kind of invested in new production lines which are more efficient. Mm-hmm. So you know, for the same units of goods, you use less electricity to produce, and really that's important for competitiveness. But it also helps you through this load shedding, and if you've got alternative supplies, And just generally, we've been aware that load shedding is coming. I think manufacturers are looking at this, and like you said, it's not a surprise that we're at stage 6. And these production managers and CEOs are kind of tracking what the schedule looks like, and they can tell you when load shedding is coming, you know, predicted a week ahead. So I do think we've learned to manage it. It's inefficient, but manufacturers have made plans.
And obviously, I mean, it's coming at a cost, and it just occurs to me that I might be manufacturing a widget, and maybe I can do it, but I'm supplying it to somebody, and maybe they're actually struggling, and therefore sort of the supply chain gets bottled up, and therefore huge cost to the individual manufacturers, broadly to our economy.
Yeah, so like you said, you know, diesel costs have gone up massively. So, you know, running that generator last year in December when it was stage 6 versus now costs you a lot more. I think we also know about all those raw material and all the other kind of pressures we always talk about. And now you add on to that kind of running your generator for 8 hours a day. Yeah. So, yeah, 100% that this kind of eats your margins. And there's only so long you can start taking that margin pressure, you know, and also then you lose production. So all of this has cash flow implications, and then they've got to pass that on to the end users. So, and like you say, the value chain, then everyone's kind of hurting because now your cash flows, you've got the fixed costs remain. You've got these extra variable costs of running generators, and it is difficult as business to sustain this over the long term.
Renewables, I mean, it occurs to me, I can quickly throw a solar panel on my house. It's not too expensive. It's easy enough to do. Is this a viable option, particularly since the president effectively deregulated the power industry in a speech last year, and as I understand, that has now been gazetted?
Yes, so Simon, I think the big thing here is that manufacturers are taking kind of their energy needs into their own hands. Mm-hmm. I think it's not a short-term issue. This, at home, you might quickly find a solution, go get a UPS, but a manufacturer is kind of planning for the long term. The solar panels, batteries, last year, the panels 25 years, the batteries 10 years. So It really is a big investment decision. And when your confidence is low, you've got to make the right investment decision. So I think what's driving it is manufacturers are going, if I'm in an area where my cost of energy is really high, this is a lot easier decision because now, I'm paying R3 as a tariff. Batteries become a lot more affordable. And it's not just about the load shedding. It's about, time, I can use those batteries to disperse at peak times. So, I'm not paying the higher tariffs in the evening peak or, my peak times. In winter, I've got a buffer for that expensive tariff. So really manufacturers are looking at this and saying, let me look at my energy cost in the long term. And this can make sense as a long-term solution, not just for the load shedding. Also, depending on your muni, we've got clients that, one of our clients got cut 40 times in a month. So for him, it was really easy to say, I'm going to build a huge battery bank, put solar in, and I've got an alternative power supply. So I think it depends on the which area you're in, what your tariff is, and it's got to be a long-term decision as the manufacturer.
And I imagine it's also partly a competitive advantage, firstly against your peers who haven't who stayed on the grid and therefore got the higher cost, the inconsistency, but also just long-term. I mean, my sense is in a world that is looking towards green and renewable, it almost becomes a badge of honor in a sense.
Yeah, so I think from a procurement point of view, a lot of clients we were talking before, they weren't sure about solar. Mm. I think solar by itself is a good investment case. That investment can pay itself back in 2 years. It's very difficult to get that kind of a returns. Mm. So number one, just the solar panels. I mean, that makes sense for most businesses to put on. And then from procurement, they are saying, a lot of these manufacturers are saying, well, I'm exporting. And this ticks one of those boxes that it is a badge of honor. Like you say, it is something that it shows that you are kind of offsetting your carbon footprint. So yes, it's definitely kind of got the good branding, but I think just generally it's a good investment case for manufacturers.
We'll leave that there. Justin Schmidt, Head New Sector Development, APSA. Always appreciate the time and insight.
Hear that? Nothing. Your money can do more when it blocks out the noise, as hard as it is these days. When you invest in the Stanley Balanced Cautious Fund, we manage the risks so that you can see stable inflation-beating returns through market cycles. Invest with more certainty at stanlib.com/more. Stanlib is an authorized financial services provider and a registered manager.
MoneyWeb now. On the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting with Carl Kleinhans, CEO of Diversity Urban Property Fund. The concept of sort of developing build-to-rent assets, but for developing them for investors. In other words, almost to order. Carl, I appreciate your early morning time today. It was a new idea which I stumbled across, what sort of folks in your space are doing, which is almost build to invest, build to purpose, and very much focusing on impact and the benefit that you can have, in your case, to cities?
Good morning, and thank you for having me. We, like many other property investors in many other sectors of the property landscape, are ultimately investing to build an asset base. And quite simply put, our thesis is simply that, if it's good to invest in office buildings, then certainly the residential is no different. There's definitely a place for this asset class within the institutional investment landscape, property investment landscape. and we think it has some pretty great fundamentals.
And it is, I mean, we talk a lot around the idea of ESG, around the idea of impact investing. And this, at its heart, really is. I mean, this is providing people with housing. And there's more to than just housing. And you make the point that if you're doing it in cities, we can save time from just, you know, getting to and from work. I always sympathize with the folks who sort of, I don't know, live out somewhere and have to drive into Sandton every morning. This is proper impact and can help people and change lives in a sense. It sounds a cliche, but actually it's probably true.
Yeah, no, that's undoubtedly true. We think the impact thesis is very strong, especially when you're looking at well-located affordable rental housing, the kinds that we do. But I think, you know, the broader point, and especially the point that we'll be making at the conference today, is that this asset class actually, you know, kind of impact agnostic is a great thing to hold in a, let's say, a pension property portfolio. It has, you know, long dated income streams. It's quite a good inflation hedge. The income streams are not really quite as volatile as you might see in other sectors of the property space. So, you know, as, you know, is the case in many other developed economies and developed markets, you know, residential forms a large part of the property investment landscape in those spaces. You know, that's not the case in South Africa. It's totally underrepresented. And, you know, to us, the impact and ESG credentials that come with the asset class are a very welcome bonus. You know, it's obviously very topical right now, but it's definitely not the only reason to invest in residential.
And certainly, I mean, and you make the point. I mean, and if we look at the different sort of asset classes within property, you've got your office, and I can work from home, and there is retail, and there's challenges there. To your point around sort of lack of volatility and that inflation hedges, people are needing somewhere to live, and people are wanting to live in cities and close to where they work. There's always going to be a strong demand. The pandemic was hopefully a once in 100 years, but generally this is going to be a very, very sort of defensive nature in terms of investing.
Yes, that's typically, you know, how the asset class is understood, you know, globally. And you know, there's a lot of kind of strong anecdotal evidence that a lot of what you just mentioned now to support the fact, you know, at the end of the day, everyone needs to live somewhere. And I think an important note on this, though, is that, you know, just as, you know, all shopping centers aren't made equally, all residential isn't made equally. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you could, you know, invest in, like, for example, the Mall of Africa or Sandton City, or you could invest in a small little regional center in Dansdorp, right? And these are different investments, and the investor landscape has, you know, grown to a point of sophistication where they're able to distinguish between those. Much in the same way, you know, a residential building in the heart of Rosebank or heart of Sandton would have a different, you know, kind of fundamental underlying, you know, kind of quality to something that's out in the middle of nowhere. And I think that's perhaps an area where our market still needs to mature, but especially among asset managers, where we start distinguishing in a more sophisticated manner between different types of residential. So there's, you know, great residential to invest in, and there's not that great. And that's true for, you know, any investment, you know, asset class, whether it's equities or bonds or residential.
No, I take your point. There's always two sides to it. A quick last one. Are you sort of building greenfields, or is this conversions that you're doing, existing buildings that you would go into and convert into residential?
We're doing mostly greenfields. There are some conversion opportunities that we'll opportunistically look at here and there, but the reality is that even if we converted every vacant square meter of office space in South Africa to residential, that would still only be a drop in the bucket compared to the demand for well-located residential. And genuinely, that's the case. You know, there's a couple of million square meters of office space in the country that's vacant presently. That's enormous from an office sector point of view, but it really is quite small if you compare it to just the square meterage of residential stock in the country. So that's not where the major opportunity lies going forward. The major opportunity is in, you know, well-built, purpose-built residential buildings on greenfield sites, but in well-located areas, right? So we're doing urban infill as opposed to building out at the urban edge in the middle of nowhere.
That's a great point, and it's that demand. And I remember chatting, I think it was about a decade ago, saying that we needed a million houses in South Africa. And of course, everyone was on the idea that this was going to be sort of the build to buy, the likes of Bourbon, of Cogra M3. But actually, we can also do this in the rental space. We'll leave it there. That's Carl Kleinhans, CCO at Diversity Urban Property Fund. Appreciate the early morning. That's it for today. We were chatting with Mateta Tulari from RMB yesterday about the ZAR and where he thought it was going. He actually thinks that it'll be a little bit stronger towards the end of the year. In fact, under 17 against the dollar. It's a long way away from that now. But I suppose the year end is still, what, 3 months and a little bit away. We asked you what you think, and 40% of you were saying, yeah, the ZAR weaker, a lot weaker. A third of you were saying, maybe a little bit of weakness. And then split evenly between the rest, about, I suppose, 15% each, I was saying either flat or actually worst is over and maybe we will see some strength going forward. Always hard to call a currency. Have your vote, have your say, Twitter and LinkedIn. This show is brought to you by Stanlib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. We're live every weekday morning. The MoneyWeb website's in the app at 6:30 a.m. Podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie, Nobokle, Nicole, Tetso, to you for listening, my guests for their early morning. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow. We're going to be talking defensive fixed income products.
Listen to the live stream of MoneyWeb Now at the same time every weekday. For more business, finance, and investment news, MoneyWeb Now on the money. Also available on podcast.